I got the horse right here, the name is Paul Revere, and here's a guy that says if the weather is clear, can do, can do.
This is Bill Buncliffe. I want to welcome you back to another edition of the Can Do Horse Racing Podcast, where the heroes in history of horse racing come alive, part of the In the Money Media Network. I was sitting in the grandstand at Emerald Downs on August 11th, 2019, the occasion being the 84th running of the track's signature event, the Long Acres Mile. During a break between two of the earlier races on the card, we were advised to direct our attention to the winner's circle, where a tribute to longtime trainer Junior Coffey would be conducted by Joe Withy, director of publicity at Emerald. Junior Coffey, I thought, I know that name. It's a memorable name, of course, if for no other reason than its punchiness, the way it easily trips off the tongue. But for that moment, the dim recesses of my memory were thinking professional football, not horse racing. I was to learn, of course, that there was much, much more to Junior Coffey than the catchiness of his name or his athletic exploits. As I turned my attention to the winner's circle, though, what caught my eye was the immediately discernible, distinguished bearing of Junior Coffey. Indefinable, but notable and noteworthy. His posture, his attitude, his demeanor were a dignity uncolored by arrogance, written in the form of the human body. I immediately thought to myself, there's a story here. So I later reached out to a friend of this podcast, Vince Bruin, director of media relations at Emerald, and asked him if he could put me in touch with Junior Coffey. It was then that Vince relayed to me that it would not be a good idea as Junior was in the early stages of dementia, that the event at Emerald that day was intended as a thank you and somewhat of a goodbye to a beloved longtime presence. An individual not only highly admired all around the track, but legendary as well in Pacific Northwest sports folklore. Having seen my own father and father-in-law ravaged by that awful disease, I was saddened for those around Junior who I knew would suffer through heartbreak as they watched the ever-worsening progression of the disease in their loved one. I, of course, did not want to intrude on what I knew would be an awful time for his family, but the one thing I never forgot was the way Junior Coffey's bearing caught my eye that day, and I filed the possibility of a story about his life away as a future opportunity. And so here we are today. It's easy to sum up a person's life in the highlights. College football star, NFL champion, horse trainer. But highlights of anyone's life can only begin to tell the story of a person's life. Thanks to the support of Vince Bruin and to that of Emerald Downs founder Ron Crockett, as well as Gary Stevens, when I dug into Junior Coffey's life, I found so, so, so much more.
There's a panhandle wind out of Texas tonight, with the cold taste of snow on the tongue.
Junior Coffey was raised in the small Texas panhandle town of Dimmit, Texas. He went there to live with his aunt and uncle, escaping an abusive stepfather. Growing up in Dimmit, he did hard, strenuous work on the farm, likely building the frame that allowed him, in his football career, to, as he once said, initiate the blow and startle the opposing defender or defenders. If you watch any old videos of Junior in his football days, you can appreciate how his size and speed delivered those blows.
I worked in the fields. So I was like working out with weights every day from the all summer long, bucking hay, throwing the hay on the trailer with the trailer in second gear and run and stack it and then run to the next pile. So really I was doing pretty strenuous work for just a kid. I guess I had a weight program, working out every day, six days a week. We'd have Sunday off and that's the way I developed very quickly.
It was late 1950s, perilous times for a young black man growing up in a southern state. He was the first to integrate his high school. He actually did not play sports before high school, but he quickly established himself, those farm workouts paying off. But recognition for his athletic gifts did not change some of the facts of life for black families in those days.
We had to shop into the small town that was there. We had to go buy groceries and be out of the white area by 6 o'clock.
Junior was the first black athlete to compete in the state basketball tournament in Texas. He was both running back and linebacker on his high school team. Longtime friend Kent Hance, who went on to become a U.S. congressman and a chancellor at Texas Tech University, recalled Junior doing everything, offense, defense, kicking off and punting, as well as returning kickoffs and punts. Everything but selling popcorn. Another thoroughbred racing legend with Texas Panhandle roots, Carl Nafsker, also attested to the power and passion Junior brought to the game.
Junior was an outstanding running back for the Dimmit. and Olsen played Dimmick there in our district all the time, and they pretty well beat us every year. But I was out of high school rodeoing at that time and came home, and I watched Junior in a pretty close game. I watched Junior walk across the line carrying about three or four of the Olsen Mustangs with him.
With that kind of resume, he got the attention of college recruiters, just not college recruiters from the Southwest Conference, of which many Texas universities at that time were a member. It was not until Jerry Levias joined the SMU varsity team under Hayden Fry in 1966 that the Southwest Conference was integrated. Graduating Dimmitt High in 1961, Junior was recruited by Texas high school football legend Chesty Walker to play at the University of Washington. His recruiting trip to visit Seattle and meet with the leaders of the Husky football program opened the eyes of this Panhandle native accustomed to the ingrained racism he had faced in the Panhandle.
Every time I left, I went to other cities, and there was no city like Seattle. I came on a visit. I was Dr. Alex Grinstein was sort of chaperone, and his family was downtown, and it was embarrassing to me in my own hometown to go to a restaurant and they would serve you on the back side of the restaurant with a little window and you paid in advance. And now I was in Seattle and they were inviting me out to dinner and I didn't want to be asked to leave. So Dr. Grinstein said, look, you're our guest. Matter of fact, he called the maitre d' over. I had never known a maitre d'. And he came over and he put his arm out, and I'm looking at him. He says, take a hold of my arm. So I did, and he took me and seated me before the other elderly. And so that opened my eyes right away, and I asked to be excused to call my aunt and tell him that we were coming to Seattle because I thought it was a free area.
At UW, Junior came under the tutelage of legendary Husky coach Jim Owens. Owens led the Huskies to the Rose Bowl three times in his 18-year coaching career, winning twice. While I mentioned earlier that the world Junior entered in the Pacific Northwest was willing, in part, to look at him differently, that wasn't always the case with Jim Owens. Ron Crockett, who led a group that essentially saved thoroughbred racing in the Seattle area after the closure of Long Acres in 1992, and a Husky to his core, remembers.
During the 1961 to 64 time was generally the reduction of the segregation situation. And it turned out that it kind of had a very negative feeling relative to Jim Owens, who was coach at the time. Jim came from the South. And there were stories that they used to sometimes take the African-American players and stack them all in one position, that kind of stuff. But anyway, for a number of years, I knew that Junior kind of held that. And by the way, Jim Owens has since passed, but
yeah.
If you go back, gosh, let me say 10 years ago, there was a very, very, very good football player, close friend of mine named Rick Redmond, who actually became an All-American and in the Hall of Fame and such. And he mm-hmm. played with Junior in the team. And at that time, Jim Owens was living in Eastern Washington, and for some reason, I had an idea. I said, Junior's harbored something for years and years with Jim Owens. I said, do you know Jim Owens well enough to request something? He said, sure, what? I said, I'd like him to meet with Junior all these years later, and when Junior's in his 60s. And so he called Jim Owens, and they met and patched up those bad feelings for all those years that Junior harbored.
Because of a foot injury, Junior always attributed to being given the wrong kind of shoes by the training staff, he missed the Huskies' appearance in the January 1, 1964 Rose Bowl against the Fighting Illini led by Dick Butkus, a game many felt the Huskies would have won had Junior been healthy. Junior led the Huskies twice in rushing, in 1962 and 1964. His combination of size, speed, and power was such that one of the most dynamic players of the 1970s era NFL, Seattle's own Terry Metcalf, looked up to Junior as his idol. Drafted by the mighty Green Bay Packers as a rookie, Junior was a part of their 1965 NFL championship team. And he certainly had his moments there, some of them on the practice field. Always, as he said, wanting to deliver the first blow, he had an infamous run-in, no pun intended, with a Packer legend.
Going against the great Ray Niske, the linebacker. And like I mentioned earlier, we were taught at the Huskies to use the crown of the helmet. And so he had a blitz pickup, and I was supposed to block him, and he come running in. And when he went to block me, I hit him underneath his chin, and it really got him upset. And one of the rookies that was with me, Eli Strand, he says, "You see what you've done? You've gotten Ray all ticked off. We're in trouble now." The coach said, "Protect yourself at all times." So he knew that we were going full speed. It's just that he didn't expect to be hit like that in practice, so it really ticked him off.
Had Ray Nitschke known Rick Redmond, perhaps Junior's intensity would not have caught him by surprise.
Rick Redmond was a linebacker. As a matter of fact, he and Butkus went into the Hall of Fame together. They were the same year. And
oh, wow. Okay.
In these days, they go up to the line of scrimmage and play calls, but in those days, there was a huddle. And, you know, just a sidelight, Rick Redmond said that in the huddle, the way that they lined up, Junior was on one end and he was on the other end of the circle, so to speak. And he said he used to watch Junior in the huddle all the time and the intensity on his face or something. And for whatever reason, he highlighted staring across at Junior every time they huddled, because Rick also played on offense.
Despite Vince Lombardi calling Junior the best special teams player he ever coached, with the NFL adding a new franchise for the 1966 season, Junior ended up being offered in the expansion draft and was picked up by the newly formed Atlanta Falcons, who he proceeded to lead in rushing for the two seasons he was on their roster. Interestingly enough, he led the team in both those seasons with the exact same total yards gained rushing, 722. Then traded to the New York Giants, he played two more years, at which point injuries forced his retirement after the 1971 season. It was a good friend of Junior's who encouraged his transition to the world of thoroughbred racing after the aforementioned Dr. Grinstein had helped Junior secure summer jobs at the track during his UW days.
There was a young man named Ronnie Oshino,
okay,
who somehow knew Junior way back, I'm not sure why, and he used to go to the races all the time and started Junior involved in the races.
Okay.
And so in the early 70s, he got involved and wanted to train horses.
As an athlete and one who knew well the value of studying and listening, Junior learned more about the craft of racehorse training from, among several on the Pacific Northwest circuit, the legendary Jim Penny. Jim Penny, who passed away in 2017, was a five-time winner of the Long Acres Mile, including a win with a horse named Educator at an astounding 40-1. A lifetime trainer of nearly 1,300 winners from just under 8,000 starters, Jim Penny was proof that Junior knew where to go to get the advice he needed to advance in his career. But Junior insisted on learning from the ground up, as Jim Penny recalled when asked.
He applied himself to learn to be a groom, learned to work with horses, and that was his forte. That's what he wanted to do.
And learn Junior did. Like any good trainer, what he learned is what I learned many years ago from now deceased football coach Sam Weiss when I heard him say, to treat everyone the same, you have to treat everyone differently. Joe Withey remembered a filly that Junior watched and studied, coming up with a solution that perhaps Ray Nitschke might have appreciated.
Fancy Native turned heads early in Coffee's training career. The well-bred filly hadn't performed until Coffee found out a way to get the best run from her.
One evening, I come back down to the barn at feed time, and she had a divot in the middle of the track piled up with dirt, and she was running circles in there, round and round and round and round. And I said, wow, she's burning all her energy up here, and then we train her, so she's getting a double jeopardy, really. And so I went to this gym and bought one of those punching bags. I thought that would prevent her from running the stall. It just made it worse. She learned how to duck in and out. She had a trail. She could get whenever the bag would be coming at her, she'd duck and duck. And I go, wow, how quick she is. I got to figure out a way. Well, I got lucky. I went out to this farm and I got a goat. Carried the goat in, and she was acting all up, and I threw the goat in the stall. And she went after the goat, and the goat threw his head up and hooked her right in the nostril. And she got like, oh, and she never moved again after that.
Junior claimed Cruisin' to Sue, a horse who rattled off six straight wins over moving over to his barn, a barn he always kept decorated with NFL memorabilia. His runaway Stevie was the top Washington Juvenile Filly of 1991. In fact, Junior Coffee is the fifth highest winning percentage trainer in Emerald Downs history with a record of 174 winners from 864 starters. Listening to horsemen Gray Gilchrist, Gary Stevens, and Ron Crockett, it's clear Junior's own athletic background was a key factor in his horses having a reputation for always being prepared whenever he sent them out on the track.
Junior and I had a lot of conversations, and, you know, he would relate a lot of his football training and even the injuries and things like that, and carry that over into horse racing. And I think there are a lot of parallels in those kind of things. Even though, you know, you're talking about human beings and you're talking about equines or horses, however you want to put it, but Junior was, when you ran against Junior, you knew that you better be ready.
Yeah, I mean, they, if they've had a hard workout or whatever, some athletes want to eat, other ones won't eat for 2 days, other ones don't want to get out of bed. they don't move the same way physically, so then you adjust.
He would not run a horse unless he was maybe 300% that the horse was fit and the horse was sound. If you had a horse with Junior, it didn't run much.
Okay.
And, but I can never remember having one that broke down that Junior had.
Jockey agent Wayne McDonald agreed with that point about Junior's getting his horses ready emphatically.
You didn't want to pick an overnight up and see you're in with Junior. He was that kind of the five or six trainers there through the 70s, 80s, and 90s that, you know, you would have rather seen him not have a horse in your race.
Perhaps it was a legacy of Junior's upbringing that led him to seek out those who needed a hand up, whether it was someone on the backstretch team or a young up-and-coming jockey fighting the odds. Then Vicky Aragon, now Vicky Aragon Bays, Junior legged up the young lady in 1985, kicking off a career that saw her boot home more than 2,100 winners from just under 14,000 starters. But the sum of Junior's life was so much more than football or horse racing. Anyone who you speak to about Junior Coffee will say the same things about him. Gary Stevens weighed in on his impressions of the man, echoing Ron Crockett and virtually anyone else who met Junior.
And I met him on the backstretch, and of course he had a reputation, but he walked with a presence to him, but he was very, very humble, and always had a smile on his face, a happy look, and a kind eye, and never had anything bad to say about anybody. And Junior Coffee had no enemy on the backstretch, which is hard to find. He was respected. He kept to himself. I never saw him lose his temper. When I started doing really well as a jockey, he said, "I don't have anything good enough for you." Yeah, you do. Yeah. I said, I'll write anything for you that you've got. And he said, "When I find one that's worthy of you," and I said, "Junior, anything's worthy of me." And in the brief time of my early Seattle days in the early 80s, when I was starting to make it big, I learned a lot from him. I wish I would learn more from him. But his humbleness, he had a kind eye. He just had a demeanor about him that you wanted to be around him. But he never changed. I remember when I won the Derby in 88, and I'd gone back up to Seattle, and he was there on the final night of Long Acres race course and stuff. Junior made a... He made it a chore to come to the locker room, to the
to the jocks room to say how proud he was. And I never had a bigger fan than Junior Coffey.
Despite the tribulations Junior faced solely because of the color of his skin and the anger that he did justifiably harbor, he took pains to make sure it didn't change who he was.
No, I mean, he was a fellow that carried himself with confidence. That was his demeanor. But there was no anger, if you know what I mean. Distinguished, and he was a handsome guy, too. The only one that I can compare him to as far as demeanor is, but not cocky, but the way he carried himself, Muhammad Ali.
High praise indeed.
Nobody disliked Junior Coffey. I couldn't find a person.
According to Ron Crockett, it was always easy to have a conversation with Junior about any topic, virtually any topic.
Tell you what he was. He was a really, really, really interesting human being. I'd almost call him a philosopher sometimes.
He
philosophized on anything you want to talk about, whether it be sports or anything in life. Junior had a pretty strong opinion. But he honestly was a character. He was. And then philosopher, you could talk about any subject, and Junior had an opinion, by the way.
Oh, that's great.
He was no wallflower by any means. People really liked Junior Coffey.
Mm-hmm.
There was not a negative bone in his body, but he was just a very, very well-liked guy. Not a, you know, bombastic sort by any means. As a matter of fact, you know, kind of a gentle giant in one respect, if that makes any sense. But I say then the philosopher in him would come out at any point in time. He shared his opinions.
Like all of us, though, Junior had his vices, too.
Junior Coffey used to eat a package of Dove bars. I mean, not
really?
Just one. Oh, yeah.
That's
Junior
hilarious.
Was into Dove bars more than you can imagine. So whoever was a present, you gave Junior a box of Dove bars. So it was his favorite deal.
When the pages of history are written, so much of the focus, understandably, of course, is on the big names that stride across the public consciousness, the Kennedys, the Roosevelts, the Eisenhowers, and the Lincolns. I've often had occasion to ponder how much better off our world would be if we paid as much attention to the Junior Coffeys of this world than people like him. Everyday people who cross our lives and by the power of their example show us what a person can and should be and how we might better ourselves and each other. Junior Coffey is a man who faced hardships that might and did take down the souls of people who withered understandably in the face of those hardships. But Junior Coffey not only soldiered on, he refused to let those hardships define who he was or what he would be in his life. That is a remarkable, really a humbling example for all of us.
Here's a toast to freedom.
I personally wish I could have met Junior when he was in his heyday and not in the grips of dementia, but just having had the opportunity to prepare this podcast, I feel blessed to know of him, even if I did not know him. I hope this little segment has helped you too get to know more about a person who I know I'll never forget. I would not have been able to do justice to a man like Junior Coffey without the support and cooperation of Vince Brune, Ron Crockett, and Gary Stevens. I thank them very much for making time to remember with me this remarkable individual. We'll be back again soon with another edition of the Can Do Horse Racing Podcast. In the meantime, may good health and happiness and gratitude for both you and your loved ones be yours today and always.
I got the horse. Ride!